Blog Talk Radio.
Rivetti, what's up?
I'm sorry, sir. It's just a difference of opinion that got out of hand.
What about?
It's really too silly to talk about, sir. I'd rather just forget about it.
I don't give a damn about what you'd rather forget about. Why were you two fighting?
Well, I said that the Kirby Silver Surfer was the only real Silver Surfer, and that the Mobius Silver Surfer was shit. And Benefield's a big Mobius fan, and things got out of hand. I pushed him, he pushed me. I lost my head, sir. I'm sorry.
Rivetti, you're a supervisor. You can get a commission like that.
I know it, sir. You're 100% right. It's never happen again.
It better not happen again. I see this kind of nonsense, I'm going to write you up. You understand? Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
You have to set an example even in the face of stupidity. And everybody that reads comic books knows that Kirby Silver Surfer is the only true Silver Surfer. Now, am I right or wrong?
You're right, sir.
All right. Get out of here.
Yes, sir.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
You know, folks, I'm trying to vest in Wakandan herbs to fight this touch of bronchitis that your boy has, but you know what? I had to do the show. Our apologies for the preemption for Wednesday's show. These things do happen, even the mighty fall on occasion. Nevertheless, we're all here, live and direct. So let's just get into it, folks. Again, this is the Grindhouse featuring Garrow B., Captain Kirk, and myself, of course, the mighty Afro Nerd. Let's go to a quick, and I do mean quick, nerdcore groove. This is I Am Superman. We'll give you about a minute, and we'll be right back. Let's groove.
I am Superman, and I can do anything.
Right, enough of that. The late, great Roger Troutman. This is the Grindhouse, the comic shop up first. The call-in number, as always, as ever, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. First up, of course, we have the mighty Captain. Captain, you're needed with post-haste on the holodeck. Let's get to it.
Yes, sir. Let's go.
Of course, the uncanny Daryl B.
So it isn't Bronco flu you got? Wow, I'm shocked.
It's not pretty. I'll say that. It's not pretty. Gentlemen, listen, we're in the throes of Black History Month, and I'm hearing more and more people talk about the need to extend, well, we've been here for years, really, to extend the month because it's the shortest month of the year and that kind of thing. But there's an awful lot of scholarship toward Black involvement in comic books. More and more people are talking about it. Sometimes I think that between ourselves, we're speaking in a vacuum. That's really not the case. We met Dr. Bill Foster, not to be confused, when we get him on the show, we'll joke about it, not to be confused with the Black Goliath character, whose pseudonym is Bill Foster, which is kind of funny. But we met Dr. Foster at the Black Comic Con a few weeks ago. And he's a comic book historian. So we had to speak to him, but there's also a young lady who also attended my alma mater in Hampton. She's a PhD from Yale, and she teaches at USC. And she, too, is also a comic book historian. And I want to play this clip of her discussing Dr. Frederick Wortham. Now, for those who are familiar, who are really deep into this comic book stuff, Dr. Frederick Wortham is somewhat of a real-life villain. Somewhat of a real-life villain. The reason being is that, and we've mentioned this before, Daryl, he wrote this book called Seduction of the Innocent. And that book really led to a change in comic books almost to this day. We had a special code. Everyone remembers that stamp on the comic books because his book theorized that comic books led to teenage delinquency. He proposed the notion that Wonder Woman was a lesbian, that there was bondage overtones in that comic, and he said that a Batman and Robin were gay. He went there on some of this stuff. Now, years later, a lot of what he wrote was actually disproved. I mean, as far as getting into the bones, the bare bones of his research. And also the fact that, you're talking about years later, the stereotypical comic book enthusiast is so far removed from a teenage delinquent. So, but it's fascinating that with him being a quote-unquote villain, there's another side to Frederick Wortham that was quite instrumental and influential in Black history and in Black progress. Now, this was a German psychiatrist, but he did some things that, for the Black comic book collector, you may have to rethink your feelings of Dr. Wortham being an actual villain. So I want to play this discussion between fourthletter.net's David Brothers and Dr. Kiana Whitted. Check it out. Hold on. I just thought I had it. I know I have it here somewhere. I want you to check it out, ladies and gentlemen. Give us your thoughts. We're always into educating our folk. And here it is here. This is Dr. Kiana Whitted. Hold on.
I think that's kind of cool.
And he's legendary. Like, it really helped me like comics more. Like, I've always liked comics since I was a kid. My uncle gave me issues or whatever. But, like, that was where I was like, wow, like, comics really are something that Black people specifically can do, you know?
Right. And can read. Like,
yeah.
They're readers. They didn't just come up in the 80s.
Yeah.
There have always been groups of Black readers who've been taking in this stuff.
Yeah, like you have the photo on your website of the little girl reading comics at a newsstand. I forget the date, but it was back in the day,
the
50s or 40s. Wow. Yeah, and it's kind of a counterpoint to the prevailing idea that, these are just for this one specific group of people. It's no, we all took part in it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's part of the work that I'm trying to do, if I can get the time to do it, to show that there were black readers, one of the things that I'm trying to look at is, for instance, the conversations going on in the Chicago Defender or in the Pittsburgh Courier that had their own comics pages.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but they talked about comic book characters and heroes in letter pages and other articles within the newspaper. So it kind of gives you some insight that there was a black readership there. And then, of course, you know, all that work that Frederick Worthen was doing, a lot of his research was on poor black kids in Harlem.
Hmm.
People don't really, I mean, they acknowledge it, but I think that the implications of that haven't been discussed as much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of what it means that this sort of villain of the industry, you know, was doing this work in New York with these kids, and you look at the notes, and they would list all the comics that they were reading. And, they were reading all of these things, the Donald Duck and the Superman, they were reading all of those comics. And that's where he did a lot of his research, so that, I think that's important.
Yeah, is there anything you've discovered while researching that kind of blew your mind a little, or is like a favorite find?
Well, I would have to say, going back to the Wortham stuff, I did have the opportunity to look at some of his papers and archives, and there's been a lot of work done on that publications by Carol Tilley and others in the last year or so. But thinking about his particular concern about the responses that black readers would have to comics, and that was also part of one of the reasons why he spoke out against these comic books. I thought that was important and interesting, and looking at some of the letters of people who were like begging him to come to their schools and talk about this, and they would say things like, we want to keep our kids from having to see you and become like the kids that you are doing your research on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a way in which I found a little bit of evidence, but still looking, some of the people were not even, they did not even realize, you know, where he was located and where he was doing his work, and that it was to benefit, again, this free clinic in Harlem. And so when he was doing all of this touring and talking about Seduction of the Innocent and everything, he would ask, instead of speaker's fees, for the money to go to the Lafarge Clinic in Harlem.
Wow.
So in a way, it was sort of like, I don't know, Seduction of the Innocent is helping to subsidize this clinic. I don't know, there's like a lot of weird connections here. I mean, his relationship with Richard Wright and Langston Hughes and Ralph Ellison always really interested me.
I had no idea about any of that.
Yeah, and the fact that, again, he's such a kind of complicated and disliked figure on our end is one thing, but on their end, he was doing some good work there for those kids and people who couldn't afford psychiatric care. And I think, so it's harder for me to see him as just a villain.
Yeah.
Although it's also hard to read some of the hyperbolic things he said about comics, too. So, I mean, I think, you know, that's what we have to deal with everywhere, right? The good and the...
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we're back. I just thought that was just a fascinating blurb right there. I want to definitely get Dr. Whitted to extrapolate that. And I want Daryl to weigh in on this as well. But The Seduction of the Innocent, that, you know, it's, that book is very much part of comic book history, and he is perceived as a villain. But when you go into what he really was about, he used black children, he was helping black children in Harlem, a psychiatric center for them. I'll tell more about that. I want Daryl to also give his thoughts.
Well, hey, I often call myself the supervillain of the show, okay? I do that in joke because no one in their right mind would call themselves a supervillain. Everybody is the hero of their own story. That's the funny thing here, right? I could go back and I could go and look at some of history's worst men and see positives that they did. whenever I hear Frederick Wortham, I always think of two things. Okay, two things. I think of Thomas Jefferson, so Thomas Jefferson and George Washington. More aptly, I think of the Chappelle joke where he says, "Me and a friend go back in time and we see George Washington. My friend would be like, 'This was the father of our great nation.'" And then he would say, "Run," and his response would be, "Run, that's George Washington." And it goes like, the thing is, both people would be right. You know, that was the line of the joke. People would be shocked, but you can't fight it because, you know, Washington and Jefferson, they both owned slaves. For as great as they were slave owners, you know. With Wortham, there's no denying the good he did, and it's well documented, the stuff he did for his clinic in Harlem and what he did with the kids, all right? But it doesn't take away from the fact that, you know, he, like many others, and I'm not saying it's just him, but a lot of leaders at the time went and jumped to conclusions, art form, in this case comic books, about how debilitating it was to kids and patterns of growing up and stuff without having the knowledge or the resources that we do now. You know, it's going to be the same thing when we look back at video games and how they affect kids. Because you see, any time there's a shooting or something like that, immediately the first response is video games. It's the video games. It's the movies. It's this. It's that. You know, and this is where I give her credit, because it's one thing for us to get on the air and scream and shout and without doing the research that this woman has. She went through, and I can't believe, you know, it must have taken years, the amount of research and to find the letters and all of that to do this, okay? I will just say this. And I know I'm rambling, but I'll just say and try to keep it as succinct as possible. There's usually two sides to any story, all right? There's usually two sides to any person. What you got to do is weigh the pros and the cons, all right? I can't deny the good he did, but I also can't deny, as a comic book fan, he's one of the reasons that comics got an unhealthy stigma attached to it, you know? Like anything in life, it's complicated. Cap?
Well, you know, his research reminds me of, let me give you an analogy. It's the nurture versus the DNA guys. You know, you have got people that tell you, well, every DNA is everything. Then you have people that tell you nurturing is everything. And you have arguments on both sides. Then the scientists come along, and they'll tell you, you are a byproduct of actually both. And you show that time and time again. Then the nurturer guys, then the DNA guys say, well, as per rule, all the people that we call scientists always have a higher IQ than the general population. And this is true. This is definitely true. So, again, each side goes overboard with their research because they want to be right instead of getting it right. Now, again, with his research, some of the things that he said and that he did were actually correct, because you are a byproduct of what you're born with and also their environment. So what you take in from the environment, whether it's comic books or what happens in your neighborhood, in essence, becomes you. But he went overboard. Because why? He wants to be right instead of getting it right. So this is something that we have to look at for everything, not just with this, with comic books. You know, and this might be partly an Afro nerd to a certain extent, even though we're dealing with comic books. But That's something that we have to look at. So his research was, to a certain extent, correct. But like anything else, it was overboard. This one, Batman and Robin is gay, this is that. You went overboard with it because you want to be right. You want to be right instead of getting it right. That's all I have to say. That's all. Just something for everybody to look at. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
Quickly, just a couple of points. You know, this was in the 50s, and it led to a congressional hearing where the publisher of EC Comics was put to the grill because his horror line was pretty horrific. I mean, the covers, I mean, even by 2014 standards, pretty grotesque. You know, a killer holding a severed head, fascination with putting things in close proximity to the human eye. You know, they would have some kind of setup where the villain would have some kind of object that, as if he was about to pierce a human eye. I mean, that stuff is pretty grotesque for anyone, especially children. And like the captain just said, there are points of interest when it comes down to messaging. Because, listen, that's half of why the reason we do what we do and what we champion here at the Grindhouse and After the Radio and the Comic Shop, we do champion with having a alternative messaging for black people, specifically people of color, in comic books. Comic books are important. And that's the irony also. That's one thing that – one of a number of things that Wortham probably did not foresee. He died in 1981, so actually there is mentioning of he was just seeing the beginning of fandom and geekdom. So that's when he had to kind of sort of start to capitulate on his earlier findings. As a matter of fact, this is just a part of trivia, another reason why I need to get my behind to the San Diego convention. Daryl might be aware of this, that there was a debate on the Mike Douglas show, two debates on the legendary Mike Douglas show. Mike Douglas was a daytime talk show host. Somewhat, you could say he's kind of sort of like a Merv Griffin or like a Johnny Carson, except that it was during the daytime. And there was two shows with Dr. Wortham as the guest. He debated Barbara Feldon, who was Agent 99 in the Get Smart series about his Seduction of the Innocent. And then a few months later, on the same show, he debated Vincent Price. And that was actually shown, snippets of that broadcast was actually shown at the Comic-Con, I think maybe a year or 2 years ago, just a part of comic book history. But the fact that he had a debate with two pop culture actors is fascinating. But again, this was like in the late 60s. By the late 70s, early 80s, the geek thing started coming around, and then he had to start doing some capitulating. Then he started talking about, well, he didn't really talk about censorship. He didn't want there to be censorship. He just wanted people to look at this. One other thing, then we'll go to something else. He was very instrumental with the psychological study that broke down racial desegregation that was used in the Brown versus Board of Topeka case in 1954-1955. He also, because I collect Ebony magazines, I don't know if you can even look this up in Google, but because I bought this old crap, I believe I bought a 1950s Ebony, and I happened to see an article about a black psychiatrist that had gotten his practice on off the ground in the 50s with white patients on Park Avenue. And he basically got that gig because Dr. Frederick Wortham gave him his nod. Between him hanging out with Ralph Ellison, as you heard Dr. Whitted talk about, Ellison, a few other authors of note, I can't remember the other one, Ellison, and his involvement with the Brown versus Board of Topeka case,
and this gentleman, and also the Holland kids, man, I don't know if he's got much of a, you know, it's something to think about. It's a difficult thing. We may have to readdress it, but I have a great deal of respect for Dr. Wortham, believe it or not. Whereas before, I hated the guy. So now I have to capitulate. All right, folks, this is the Grindhouse. Give you some information as we always like to do. This is Black History Month. Next up, before we go to a musical break, I want to go into this. We just confirmed that Paul Bettany has been given the part of the Vision for Avengers, the sequel, Avengers, The Age of Ultron. Now, I didn't even know there was going to be a Vision in this movie. So I'm glad on that end. Paul Bettany, you already know of him because he is the voice of Jarvis in the Avengers series. So, Daryl, what are your thoughts about this? Am I saying he's a great actor? He kind of has the look. But I'm not too comfortable as to how they're going to make this Vision look, what the Vision is supposed to look like. He is a synthesoid. He is a android. I'm not comfortable with what they're talking about, how he's going to look. What are your thoughts?
Well, if you can't get the guy from RoboCop, the original guy from RoboCop, I keep on forgetting his name, all right? Paul Bettany is a close lookalike to him. And like it or not, he's got a look of kind of almost robotic and stuff. All you have to do is add a little CGI and red and green paint with the costume, and I could see him pulling it off. You know, it's, again, here it is. With the track record of Marvel, do something like this, and we give him a large berth. We'll get into the other rumor floating around by the other company where they haven't established the track record yet, all right? And I get into this argument all the time with people, similar to the news about, oh, we may do a sequel to Guardians of the Galaxy. They float that out. Marvel can do this because they've already set up a foundation. There's a foundation, all right? And 9 times out of 10, whether you liked the movie or hated the movie, of any of the movies that came out, all the movies served in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, all right? At least the Marvel Cinematic Universe in regards to Avengers, have served to lay a solid foundation out where they could try moves like this. And if it's good, hey, we'll roll with it. If it's bad, all right, let's see where we messed up. Let's see if we could correct it. Let's go on to the next thing. I'm a Bettany fan. Ever since him and Heath Ledger did that night movie or that jousting movie, you know, he's quick-witted. He's able to zing, but also he has serious sides to him. You know, I like his acting chops. You know, to play an emotionless robot / synthesoid that suddenly finds emotion, I could see him pulling it off. Just like I could see James Spader as the voice of Ultron very, very easily. You know, could pull off Sinister just like that. Marvel is able to do these moves because they've put the time in and they've had a plan. Captain?
Now, here's the question. Is he actually playing him or is he just voicing him? Or is he doing both? That's the question. That's my question.
I think he's playing him. He's playing him. Either the deal is whether he's going to be wearing a helmet. And they're saying, well, if he wears a helmet, then he's going to kind of sort of confuse you with Iron Man. So either they're going to go with a helmet or they're going to go with makeup. And he's not going to be the red and yellow and green that we are familiar with. There's another Vision, you know, another Vision where he was all white.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like they're going to make him, like, very albino white looking. And there is...
And then they know
it is... It is hold on, Daryl. Hold on. There is a... You know, it has been written in that way in the comic books. I mean, there is a quote-unquote white look to Vision in the comic book. It's just let's be fair, the one we really want to see is the one with the red face.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, he definitely could play it. And, well, just to add, the geeks and nerds wouldn't get confused, but general audience might get confused between Iron Man and the Vision. That might happen, you know, but the geeks and nerds would never get confused. But I think definitely, yeah, he could play it. Why not? Marvel is real good with doing these type of things. It's not like we're doing DC, Green Lantern, we'll be talking about you later. Screw you. But anyway, you know, Marvel doesn't have a problem switching gears, as we've seen so far. So why not? It's not a bad move. It's not a bad move. I won't say that this is the greatest move, but it's not a bad move. They still have my attention. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Oh, and before you begin, the name I was looking for was Peter Weller, the guy who played RoboCop in the original series. Bethany looks like a younger version of him. Sorry for intruding, but I just wanted to clear that up. Go ahead, Afro Nerd.
That's right. Yeah, Peter Weller, they have a similar look, but Peter Weller, we saw him in the last Star Trek. Excellent actor. He's in his 60s. This gentleman is younger. You know, either here or there. I don't know if he wants to play another android. You know, it depends on how we felt about it. But I think I'm not really worried about this guy as an actor. And kind of dovetailing off what the captain talks about, Marvel really gets the real deal as far as A-list talent for their movies. And you figure the WB would have that cachet. And that's probably a question mark there. What's the deal with WB? I mean, James Spader, I mean, this guy's a phenomenal. No one's going to sit there and say, you know, if you notice, there's been very few controversies on the Marvel side with casting because they really can't say, even with Robert Downey Jr., there was a little bit of controversy on that, but it was somewhat couched in, well, this guy is talented. And Robert Downey Jr. could do anything. That guy is an incredible talent, and now you couldn't think of anybody else. I'm scared of when he decides to give over that role to somebody else. Who's going to be able to outdo Robert Downey Jr.? I don't know. So Marvel's is just better at this. Now the other thing before we go to a break is, well, you know what? I'm going to throw it out there, and then we'll discuss it after the break. There's also talk of Dwayne The Rock Johnson being John Stewart, and he hashtagged something on Twitter, and he kind of sort of, I mean, these guys, Morris Chestnut, he said something about Black Panther, then he has to take it back. So I don't know what it is about movie studios that, I don't know what it is with actors, they get giddy and they throw out stuff about the part they got, and then a few days later they have to do some kind of backtrack walk. So anyway, we'll talk about that. But he did hashtag on Twitter, John Stewart can kick Superman's ass. That was his hashtag. So, you know,
I like that.
He's ready to get it in. I like it too. You know, he's ready to get it in. And actually, you know what? Let me not start, because we're gonna end up not getting it. Because you may need someone like him to straighten this nonsense out. All right. Going to a Nerdcore groove, folks. This is the great Adam Warrock, Maleficent. Maleficent, we'll be right back in the game. Let's groove.
And here we go again. Another round, another bout, another knockdown, girl. You're so magnificent. You with pale skin. You with horns, too. I never want to mess with the woman scorned, too. I like an edge to my women, like I'm so close to swimming in shark-infested waters, that's where you push me in. Cause what's love? Another problem solved. Cause it keeps me honest with all of the danger involved. Yeah, this one goes out to all the vengeful, crazy, villainous, Cruella de Vil bitches. I mean misses. Oh wait, please don't grab your scepter, listen. Sometimes I put my foot in my mouth when talking about, I mean, I like the evil in you, I know your secret. And those snow white brides is too simple for me to be with. So mirror, mirror, who's the fairest in the land? Cause my answer makes a friend.
girls, I've had them too, yo. I want a woman with a heart made of stone. If she doesn't, then I'll leave her alone. Come on, yeah. You say you're troubled, then I'm down for detention. And the magic that you're brewing, well, you've got my attention. Don't mention it, because I like it. The way you scare little kids, because I'm a full-grown man, that's how it is. And I ain't here to change you, so go ahead and rock whatever you like. Because I can match your form of wear, one whore. I rock them too, you curse, I do it too. You like all black, then that's the color of most of my suit, yeah. So many people want a perfect relationship, but me, I want a mate I can hate with. No halo hovering over my head. I've made mistakes, it's likely you probably made them too. So I'm with you, yo, let's burn the city down. Let's curse our enemies' flood and let the river drown. All of the places that never wanted us around. We can do our own thing, so keep that smile upside down, yo. Oh, my maleficent, you're so magnificent. And so they call you evil, I'm just not listening. I ain't Prince Charming, I'm just a simple man. Safe and picture perfect beauty for my women friends. I like the bad girls, cause I'm a bad man too. Forget the good girls, I've had them too, yo. I want a woman with a heart made of stone. If she doesn't, then I'll leave her alone. Come on, it's like M to the A to the L.
Feeling that cut, Captain, Daryl. That was the great Adam Warrock, Maleficent. Thank God for him. Really. In fact, I just have to put it out there. I mean, just the fact that you have somebody that's doing something. I mean, listen, of course we're going to have a certain level of affinity for this young man because he's actually doing music using sci-fi, comic book, and fantasy references. But he's doing it quite aptly. He's not doing it like I don't want to take a dump on Weird Al Yankovic, but this is something else. This is what hip-hop was supposed to really be, is be so topical with anybody. Like, whatever your life, whatever you're into, you can apply hip-hop to that. And that's what's missing commercially, is that we're just really stuck on stupid. But we have these fringe elements that are quite talented. So shout out to Adam Warwick. We got to get him on the show as well. He's touring. Is he touring now?
Yep, He'll be in Brooklyn tomorrow. I'll see if I could. I'll hand him the card again and tell him he needs to call in, and I'll see what I could do with that. And it's so apt you play that because Valentine's Day is coming up. So you know, here's hoping everybody out there finds their own magnificent for themselves.
All right, the caller number once again, folks, this is the Grindhouse. My Wakandan herbs are semi-working. I feel like myself sort of with this Bronco thing. The caller number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Before the break, we were talking about box office giant and wrestler. You know, he's a specimen. He's a big dude, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. There's kind of, he put that hashtag there. Now he just said, well, I just said he could beat Superman. So he said, he tried to say that, well, that's not to say that I am going to be Green Lantern, but I don't know. You know, Warner Brothers did speak to him about something. So I don't know, but I think that they would feel more comfortable with him taking over the role of Green Lantern. If there's anybody that might have a little bit more of a better track record and people wanting to see a movie, because there's going to be people that's going to want to see a Rock movie. And then there's going to be people who want to see a better Green Lantern movie. So if they're going to reboot this franchise, and also there are people who as we've spoken about quite a few times in this show, let's face it, there's a generation that's more familiar with a man of color in that costume than with the last incarnation. What are your thoughts on that? Let's go to the casting. What are your thoughts on that, Cat?
Well, I see Daryl is foaming at the mouth, and he wants to get in, you know, definitely. So I'll be really brief here. I think Dwayne Johnson, if this is the case, if he actually gets the role, if they're not leading us on and playing games with us, I think he'll definitely put people in the seats. He definitely has a strong fan base, and it would be somewhat interesting to see what he does with the role. Now, I know a lot of people will say that it's not the traditional, it's not the this, it's not the that. Some people will say that, you know. If you're going with a black guy, he should be probably darker. Some people will say that too, you know. But I won't say that. I think it's better than the last version or individual that we had playing Green Lantern. That's all I'll say as far as that's concerned. So it would be interesting to see what he does with it, you know, because he has the fan base. Back over to you, Sir Apple Nerd.
You know something else? We got to keep it 100 here. He doesn't wear his blackness on his sleeve. He doesn't wear his blackness on his sleeve. Now, Terrence Howard is a fair-complected brother, but he is a, and I'm going to let the audience figure out what I meant by that. No one's going to question him. So it really is political more so than even skin tone, because we played the tape that you better not mess with his wife or I'm going to kill you. Shout out to Terrence Howard. So Terrence Howard, we know how this works. Terrence Howard wears his blackness on his sleeve. And Dwayne The Rock Johnson, he's been interviewed in Essence magazine. And, of course, you know, they said, well, have you dated black women before? You know, and he said, of course I have. But, you know what I mean? There's people like myself. I don't necessarily wear, well, I call myself the Afro nerd. In public, I don't talk about black all the time. I try to distance myself from it, to be honest with you. It can't be the subject of every discussion. So I think this will be a good look. I think they will need someone like Dwayne The Rock Johnson, because they need someone to deal with the stink of what Ryan Reynolds left. We have a caller, but let's go to Daryl.
I didn't want to call his name.
Let's remember, I said when they were talking about, hey, Denzel as Green Lantern, you know, I go like, the only reason you do it is to bring the fan base in. Rock's got a sizable fan base, and Cap and you chose the right words, fan base. That's what you want to get here. You want to get fan base in. You want to get his fan base in. Some of the brothers that follow him, some of the Samoans that follow him, don't watch comic book movies, you know. But if you could get them hooked, they'll follow along the line. You know, if you could get 10% of them hooked to follow along the line, you're good. The thing here is, again, I state it again, is it a plan or are you just throwing stuff against the wall to see what sticks? Okay? Hey, you never know. Dwayne might have been just looking at JLU reruns on the CW this morning and then put that tweet out. And then, Warner Brothers has you contracted. You can't be saying that. Okay, I have to retract it. But come on, comic book fans. In the words of Kyle Rayner, who is half Latino, Superman's powerful? You know how powerful this ring is? You know I could split atoms with this, right? He looks down at the ring, and the whole JLA shut up. So, yes, Green Lantern, specifically John Stewart, because he had the mind with that ring, could kick Superman's ass. Come at me. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
All right, let's go to the callers. 703, welcome to the Grindhouse, Afro Nerd Radio. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. What's up?
Good evening, gentlemen. This is Bike for Life calling from D.C.
Hey,
what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on? Quickly on Terrence Howard, I was sort of near him a few years ago at Howard Homecoming. He might not wear his blackies on his sleeve, but let's just say he got some screws loose, and I'll leave it there. And I saw that, and I saw that up close. But anyway, getting back to the Dwayne Johnson, I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, I hope it happens. I'm getting to the point now where it's sort of, you know, like any hint of anything close to a black or a person of color in a comic book movie, we're kind of jumping at it. I'm looking at IMDb. I don't see anything on there in regards to a future project. So until this stuff is signed and it's official, I see it in Hollywood Reporter or somewhere like that, it's just internet chatter that somebody just makes up and kind of floats some stuff out there.
Hey, Bice, you're coming over to my camp. I converted Cap to it in regards to if a JLA movie happens, or in regards to a Black Panther movie happens. I will believe it when I sit in the audience and I have the drink right in front of me and I see it's coming a feature presentation about the show and I see the credit, the title come up on the screen. Because everybody puts up all of these stories, and in-house, out-house, you get all of these stories. Okay, wake me when I got tangible proof.
Like I said last week, I really think, you know, does it need to go this far? But maybe if people confront Feige and the rest of the Marvel guys at Comic-Cons, okay, guys, we're all fans of the Marvel Universe. We're going to support it. But hey, when's our turn in line? Maybe he needs to get to that point. Because I'm seeing like phase 3 and phase 4, and I haven't seen anything with Black Panther or anyone else that, you know, that we're looking for is even in the pipeline.
Well, we're getting some. We're not getting enough. And again, if you're a black man in Hollywood and your name is not Will Smith, or Denzel Washington, we are not touching you for a sci-fi slash fantasy slash comic book movie to headline it. Sure, you'll be the second or third backup. You'll be the sidekick. But to headline? Nah. We don't think you can pull it off.
Well, they just dropped Will Smith on Independence Day, too. So I think Will Smith's star is dim somewhat. But again, gentlemen, great show.
Hey,
maybe I'll be listening.
Thank you, man. Thank you, Bison. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
Bison may be on
something
because
the budget wasn't that big for it. He wanted a lot. It came down on the budget for that, man.
After Earth Backlash.
What was that? After Earth?
What?
Well, you know, After Earth, really, you know, I wonder how much they really spent on them. It didn't really look to be that expensive.
No, but
there might have been some. There might have been some, you know, some trickery with the numbers as to how much was really spent on that film.
Yeah, but again, Backlash, man. You know what they wanted? They wanted that to be made into the next, not iRobot, but the next District 9. You know, a low budget sci-fi film that gets his audience in, and all of a sudden it's making 400% past what we spent on it. You know, that's what they wanted. And that wasn't going to happen because, again, the black community saw it, took a look at the trailers and all of that. Some people got past their own stereotypes and went and watched it and saw it's not just a sci-fi movie, but you guys know guys like this. Oh, what,
said
spaceship?
It was
large animals? Nah, man, that ain't a movie for us. Let him make a real movie for us. Where's Bad Boys 3 come out?
They said it was $130 million they spent for the budget.
Wow. So that's kind of a lot. You know, because, you know, listen, these big budget, the Man of Steels and stuff, they're in like $100 million, you know, like $200 million. But if you're doing $130 million and you're not doing a superhero film, I mean, that was because of, you know, it's Will Smith. You're not always going to hit one out the box. But we'll see what happens. I hope that he's able to, you know. I know he doesn't want to do the sequel to Independence Day. And I have no desire to see that thing unless he's in it. If he's not in it, why do I want to see this?
I agree.
So they need to give up.
You can't do a whole movie on Jeff Goldblum doing another computer virus?
No. You know, to see these people 20 years later, I think it would be interesting. You know, because you'd have to have somebody replace Vivica Fox, because she looks like somebody's grandmother now.
Ooh.
So much plastic surgery. Vivica Fox played his wife. Now she looks like, I mean, Will Smith still looks like himself. Vivica Fox looks like a mess. Well, it's a wrap. Some people believe Hollywood a little too much, unfortunately. You know what? It's still Black History Month, folks. I want to mention one other thing, highlighting some black books. This is dovetailing off of comic book resources. Each week for the month, they're highlighting black created books. And there's one book called The Inheritors, The Inheritors number one, which came out this month. And it's by Robert Garrett, and it's from Exmoor Studios, drawn by Albini Olina. So if I were you, I'd definitely go to comic book resources to check it out. The artwork looks pretty decent. It looks very damn well, actually. And it's a black creator book. Seems to be definitely a sci-fi slash criminal drama. But it's a black book, The Inheritors, number one. You know anything about this, Daryl?
Well, yeah, I know of it through there, and I went to the website, and I took a look at it, and I'm like, oh, okay, this looks interesting. Let's see where they go with this. You know, we're at the point now. We brought up Lion's Forge last week, and they've spotlighted three of Lion Forge's books. Brian Cronin and the staff at Comics Should Be Good at Comic Book Resources, they spotlight three of those books. And it's just, as we talked to David Walk a couple of weeks ago, you could take the superhero, all the pathos of the superhero, and all these creators are doing is, it's essentially superhero comics, but you're just putting a twist on it. You're putting a slant on it, all right? We're not saying the books are black-centric. We're not saying, oh, you got to buy it because it's black. But if you're like us, and there's books that come out every week that you read, and you're like, why am I buying it? It's the same old trope. It's the same old formula. We're all at the age now. We want something a little different. And books like The Inheritors, they take the mythos, and they just tweak it a little, where it's inclusionary, where you're not feeling like, I'm reading this, I can't be a part of this, you know? You're reading it, and you're getting involved in the story, you know? In all perspectives, you're not just a guy stuck outside with your head pressed against the window looking at what's happening. You got a sense of, oh, this feels realistic to me. This might happen to me, you know. It's part of the Spider-Man type fantasy, you know, where you're the nerd, the outcast, the geek, and all of a sudden you luck into powers, and all of a sudden you're able to live out on the stage, you know. Books like this do that for our community, and I'm glad that Comic Book Resources and other sites during this month are highlighting these books, and I hope more creators are encouraged to share their material out there. Cap?
Well, sometimes when you look at some of these independent comics, the artwork is trash, the storyline is bad. Not the case here. It's a simple, decent storyline, and the artwork is a lot better than I thought it would be when I saw it. So this is real good. This is good. And they kept, so far, it's very simple, easy to follow, you know, nothing dramatic, and the artwork is actually a lot better than a lot of times, not all the time, a lot of times, not all the time, that I see with a lot of these independent, quote-unquote, startups from time to time. It's just like, ah, oh, what is this? This is but this was decent. It's legitimate. It's definitely legitimate. It's worth checking out. It's definitely worth checking out. And I like the fact it's simple. You know, it's just simple, straight to the point, and you just go in. There's also like a little trailer there, too, that they're showing to help try and sell it also. You know, so it's decent, definitely decent. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. Thanks, Captain. If there's a 11-minute trailer, you go to YouTube for I guess it's a live interpretation, a short film live interpretation of the comic book, The Inheritors. So definitely check it out. Go to comic book resources or go to YouTube and check it out. And one other thing I want to mention, I don't know if Daryl picked up on this. So I know you've been very critical, and rightfully so, of Greg Land's artwork. You know, I like the idea of the Mighty Avengers. You know, we spoke about this, folks, that the Mighty Avengers, well, you know, listen, anytime anything becomes very popular in cinema, whether, you know, especially with Marvel or DC, they're going to ram it down your throat with 10 or 15 different iterations of the same characters. Wolverine is so many different Wolverine books. They just had a new number one Wolverine. You know, keep on giving you more Wolverines, more X-Men. We went through that. Now they're doing that with the Avengers. This time, though, with the Mighty Avengers, at least this week, Greg Land had the cover. He didn't have the interior art, which was good. I was like, oh, God, thank God. I didn't, you know, I could get into the books because I see where Daryl talks about it. Like, it is a little bothersome. It's like you're looking at stick figures. I don't know how to explain it. But, Daryl. One thing I want to mention. The book, I forgot who was the writer.
Al Ewing.
What's his name?
Al Ewing.
Yes. He tapped into, is he a black guy?
No. Don't believe so. I think he's a white dude, but, you know, he's talented, and he doesn't write patronizing characters. Let's put it that way.
Blue Marvel, you know, he's this ultra-smart black Superman analog. And he talks about having a daughter that is – he's having a conversation with Jessica Jones, who is – Luke Cage's fiance or whatever. He's talking about raising children. We all know now that Luke Cage and Jessica Jones have a baby, and they're talking about parenting. And then he says, "Oh yeah, you know, my daughter, she's at Spelman." It's okay. That's, you know, you like to see little things like that. So he's an accomplished scientist, a doctor, and he has a daughter that's in Spelman. This is a comic book now. And then Captain Marvel, well, actually she's Spectrum now, a black female superheroine, there's a conversation where a little girl and her mother talk about how they really dig her as a person to look up to, and they make some kind of thing about hair straightening. They said, well, I wasn't sure about having my little girl straighten her hair, but because you straighten your hair, I'm going to let my daughter straighten her hair. And then, I don't want to go give so much
it's
away.
Deep.
But
it's
very insider. It's very insider. So this guy's got to be a black guy to throw out Spellman and get into hair issues in an Avengers comic book. This book has gotten to the top of my list very quickly.
You know what? We'll speak more about it next week, but I find it's great that that scene happened on the same week they released the Captain, the Miss Marvel 1 involving the Pakistani-American character. And we'll get into both of those next week because we could talk about it. Hopefully it's heralding a change at Marvel, but yeah, I want to see how long it lasts.
Yeah, you know what? We're a little late. Captain, I think we're going to have to go next door. to the AfroNerd Radio Show. Any closing remarks, gentlemen?
Nope. Enjoy it, guys.
Let's go. Let's keep it moving.
Dramatic pause.
Well, actually, I'm trying to find a clip to get us our sign-out music. Okay, here we go. Hold on, folks. We'll be with you in a few moments. Thanks, Darryl.
Enjoy.
Spot for the beard?
I think not.
How many of you are familiar with the Chris Rock routine? Very good. Okay.
How come Chris Rock can do a routine and everybody finds it hilarious and groundbreaking, and then I go and do the exact same routine, same comedic timing, and people file a complaint to corporate? Is it because I'm white and Chris is black?
So we're going to reenact this with a more positive outcome.
I will play the Chris Rock guy. I would like to see someone else pull this off.
Well, let's have someone who wasn't involved in the reenactment.
Okay, I will play Guy Listening.
Great, Guy Listening. Okay, anyone else remember?
I remember.
Great. You're the Chris Rock guy, and you're Guy Listening.
Okay. Kevin is a great guy. He's a great accountant. He is not much of an entertainer.
Basically, there are two types of black people. And black people are actually more racist because they hate the other type of black people. See, every time the one type wants to have a good time, then the other type comes in and makes a real mess.
I'm sorry. He's ruined. He's butchering it. Could you just let me? Every time black people want to have a good time, some ignorant ass. I can't care, my kid.
Wait.
What you want, cookie?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk. Who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, AfroNerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. AfroNerd.
Good evening, folks. Listen, apologies for our preemption for the Wednesday show, but I caught some touch of bronchitis. Sorry about that. And I'm still dealing with it, actually, but I didn't want so many days to really pass without really getting back on the radio. So, again, these things do happen. We have a lot to get into, actually. I just heard that the DMX versus Zimmerman fight has been canceled. We'll talk about it. But we just missed a bullet. And I hope that's not like a double entendre, actually. But as far as black culture is concerned, if that fight had actually gone through, it would have been over. I would say, okay, that's it. That's it. We'll talk about it. Let's go to a quick urban alternative groove. This is the mighty Charles Bradley. You put the flame on it. You put the flame on it. Let's get into it. Let's groove. We'll be right back. On it, Charles Bradley. I'm a bit under the weather, so that's why I'm flubbing here and there, so apologies for that. Hopefully I will be in full order going into next week, but I didn't really want so many shows to be preempted. So again, I'm back maybe at 80%. So it is what it is. The call in number 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. My right-hand man, partner in white-collar crime, you know him. He is the captain. Captain, you need it in the holodeck again. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Alleged crackhead versus wannabe police officer. Woe, woe, what a tangle web we weave. Need I say more?
Captain, for the last show you were talking about you wanted a 5-minute diatribe. Do you want to get into that now or?
Nope, not at all.
Okay, let's just get into this issue. I guess it's waiting now with a D, waiting. Excuse me, because we're hearing that this fight has been canceled. The promoter is dubious. He lost his license. As you just said, DMX is alleged to be drug-addled. I think that's pretty much confirmed. He's 43. Zimmerman was 30. Both of them are hot messes, as they say on the street. You have Zimmerman, who all of a sudden he wants to be a tough guy. You couldn't beat a 70-year-old child, and you had to use a gun. Now, we spoke on the show. I didn't know what happened. I did not know what happened that night that young Master Martin was killed. But I do know that there was an altercation. Mr. Zimmerman was not getting the upper hand, and he had to use a weapon. Now, all of a sudden, he wants to take on the world. It doesn't make any sense. But at the same time, they announced this on young Master Martin's birthday. I mean, whatever happened, a young man died. From what many people would agree, needlessly. Whatever the circumstances, we can argue. But it's not something to make light of. And in doing this, and for so many black folks that would have been riding with this, it would have been a mass cultural embarrassment. And I said it to the Oracle. I would have been, although I'm no fan of Zimmerman, I would have almost wanted to root for Zimmerman to kick DMX's ass just for the irony. Just for the irony. Because I suspect DMX thought he was going to be able to fight on black super strength. And we know we lost that superpower maybe 20 years ago. And you know what I mean? He thought he was going to walk in there with black anger, which is a type of super strength, black historical anger, and he's going to bring it to Zimmerman. And also, where is this black super strength when the babies are getting through the brain in the hood? All the commentators, all these people said, you heard all these people on the street that want to bring it to Zimmerman. But there's stuff that's more locally going on. You're not bringing it to these people. The whole thing is ludicrous, Captain. What are your thoughts?
Well, I totally agree. I totally agree. It's total menstrual nonsense. Total menstrual foolishness. Didn't make any sense. Some black people that I ran into, emphasis on some, and these were learned individuals, and that's what hurt me. And they said, oh, I hope George Zimmerman's ASS. And in my mind, I'm laughing. I said, I'm not going to debate. I'm not going to correct. I'm not just going to jostle with these individual fools. What should have been said, there's no reason that these two minstrels should be doing this in the first place. It makes us look extremely bad. But you can't tell these fools this. You can't tell these fools this. So I just let them go on, carry on, and talk and say, yeah, DMX should do this, DMX should do that. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine this? And these are people that are college-educated black people. And I said to myself, if these are the educated blacks, not all educated black people think this way, but if these are educated black people, what are the ones, what we call the lower tier, impoverished individuals, single-parent household individuals, and probably not all of them, but probably a lot more of them, what are they thinking? I was just baffled, caught off guard. I thought, I couldn't believe it. It's a travesty, the thinking. Amazing. But you said it best. You said it best in the beginning, This would just been, as you said, if this would have went down, black people, forget about it. Just forget about it. We're just wasting our time now at this point. Just forget about it. That's the reality of it. Back over to you, Seraph from Nerd.
Well, listen, I'm going to go into something else because it's definitely dying down, and thank God. And yes. I'm an agnostic and I'm saying that. The deal here, Captain, is we're talking about culture, a segment of black culture that has been so popularized, it's mainstream. this mainstreaming of the lower end or the lower rung of black culture, the mainstreaming of it, has become so normalized. The educated are victims to its programming. And it's we talk incessantly about how folks are unable to think constructively and critically, because if you look beyond, oh, this is a spectacle, this is making light of a young man that was killed in a very tragic way. Not only is that happening, but then you're talking about announcing it on his birthday, and there's nothing to gain from it, really. And this whole thing about, you know, you're thinking you could take on Zimmerman, we don't know if you really can kick Zimmerman's ass. So this whole thing, if it went through, it would have been a mess. And if he lost, it would have been a double mess. It's always this thing, Captain, of pushing, how far can we embarrass black people? Like, how low can we go, as the great Chuck D said? How low can you go? And I'm trying to find out the bottom, because usually if someone who is drug-addled or has problems, they got to get to the bottom in order for there to be correction. And I don't know what the black bottom is. I don't know what it is. This is very close. This kid died. Mary Poppins event. Like, you know, this kid didn't really die. I mean, come on. And Zimmerman, and I'll say this much. We've talked about this many times during the trial. I was not comfortable with how some black folks perceived that case, because they said, well, we know what happened. We know. No, you don't. That's something that you don't know what happened. But we do know what happened. No, you don't. But even beyond that, the reality is that we have to start to deal with our own internal nonsense. And for people to see us ready to take up arms against this Zimmerman guy, we're going to avenge him. You're not avenging these knuckleheads in your communities. Where is this vengeance down your block or in your 5, 10, 15-mile radius? Where is that vengeance? Where does it go? That's it. I'm not going to go into it that deep this time, but it's just, there's so many tangents to this, Captain. I find it amazing. It's just insulting that this was even considered. Close for it to be a reality. That it goes to show you that they always try to stick that pin in the black backside to see how much it's going to hurt. And we don't seem to not be able to feel any pain. And I'm curious about that. Very disturbing, ladies and gentlemen, very disturbing. All right, I want to touch on something that we spoke about maybe a few shows ago. We got into a very, very festive conversation toward the tail end of the show, when we were talking about President Barack Obama's State of the Union address and how it really was not that well received by a segment of the Chicago neighborhood folk who have been dubbed the grassroots of that neighborhood, the black grassroots, political black grassroots. And we got into discussion about, to me it was a lot of victimization talk. And we know we don't really do that here. And I want to provide you a clip of Dr. Thomas Sowell, noted conservative educator. And he breaks down, or anyone has not really been able to obtain economic success through politics. So I want you to hear this clip. We'll talk about it for a few moments, but I know this from observation, but I want someone else to speak about it. So this is Dr. Thomas Sowell from maybe 30 years ago, believe it or not, on Tony Brown's journal, Tony Brown's on PBS. So these two talk about, now it's 30 years ago, but interestingly enough, how they were talking, you could see the predictions of where we are now. So let's get into it. This is Sowell on Tony Brown. Hold on.
What about the role of politics in the economic future of blacks in this country?
Again, I would draw upon the experience of other countries and other groups. I can't think of a single group anywhere in the world that has risen from poverty to affluence through politics. There are any number of groups that have risen from poverty to affluence through almost every other conceivable means. When I look at the groups that have had spectacular rises, like the Jews or the Chinese, they are almost invariably groups that stayed away from politics. And they usually stayed away until after they became affluent. Some of them could then afford to go into politics. But that was not the mechanism by which they got where they are.
What was the mechanism?
Basically work, skills, saving.
Now, you're saying then that the train in the black community, in terms of voter registration and political power, political empowerment, is on the wrong track.
I think that if what you expect out of that is economic advancement for the mass of black people. Now, if all that you're looking for is some advancement on the part of the leaders, or if what you're looking for is something like what happened in the Civil Rights Revolution, where you needed to get the Southern Jim Crow system broken, that was an enormous achievement through politics, as I point out in the book. So it's not that politics can't do anything. It's a question that politics, like everything else, has some things it can do and some things it can't do. And from what I've seen of groups around the world economically, one of the things it seems not to be able to do is raise groups from poverty to affluence.
Well, who controls the society? Those that are in the political control or those in economic control?
Those with economic skills tend to advance, whether they have any political power or not. And those without those skills tend not to advance, even when they have great political power.
Well, what about dominating a society? Do you dominate a society through politics, or do you dominate it through economics?
Depends on how you define it. But in Malaysia, for example, the Malays have overwhelming political domination of their society, and they use it ruthlessly against the Chinese minority. The Chinese still make double the income of the Malays on the average.
You make a statement in your book, Dr. Sowell, and I would like to quote, "Discrimination has been pervasive, but not pervasively effective."
Yes.
What does that mean?
It means that people have discriminated against other people wherever they've had the power to do it, almost everywhere in the world and almost every period of history. Some groups are kept back by this, and some groups, it seems to make no difference whatever. Insofar, for example, as you have entrepreneurial skills, the fact that people didn't hire Jews in the 19th century didn't stop Jews from hiring each other and setting up and dominating industries such as the garment industry or the beginning of the great Hollywood movie studios and other areas of the economy. It is the skills that are crucial and not the fact that other people are willing or unwilling to hire you. Even groups that have a great animosity towards other groups will nevertheless hire members of those groups with skills in the long run if there are enough of them to make it worth their while.
What's the lesson in that statement for black Americans?
Skills are what matters. If other people will not acknowledge your skills in the short run, then those same skills are useful in the black community with other blacks. It's what has made other groups advance from poverty to affluence. I know of nothing else that's really done it.
All right, Captain. You sent this clip to me a while ago.
Yes, sir.
And really, it's very similar to what Dr. Amy Chua, what she says. I'm sorry, she might be. Is she a doctor? Maybe she isn't. But she's a professor, Yale law professor.
Yeah.
And she has a book out now called The Triple Package. And her book is probably just as I've got to get Sowell's book. But he goes into ethnicities and culture, not race. So everyone is pretty much in agreement. It's not in your DNA necessarily. It's more about your mores, what you consider important, your culture. Culture is how you conduct your life. It's your lifestyle. Lifestyle equals culture. And, you know, we got into a rather festive conversation one of the last shows, and there was an empathy or empathic notion toward those folks that were really digging into Obama, these black Chicagoans, these grassroots folks that just kept on laying into him as if he's going to just move his mighty black hand and all these problems are going to go away. And, you know, there's some things that are going to have to be dealt with that really have nothing to do, whoever's in there. Like, even when JFK was in office, there were black folks that were putting pressure on him to make some changes. It seems like they want Obama to be that advocate naturally. Like, you have to pressure him because he can't do it on his own because he's not supposed to be the advocate. He's the president. But even whatever changes he can make, whoever is president, black or white, conservative or liberal, you have to have black people putting pressure on you. And I think that element is missing. And also the fact that you're not going to be able to make it up on the come up through politics. And Dr. Sowell kind of pretty much kicked it. What are your thoughts, Captain?
Well, there's a couple of ways I can go with this. Let me talk about Nation of Islam for a moment. Now, the Nation of Islam, forget about the religious overtones. You might be Christian, you might be Buddhist, you might be a Satanist. Who knows what you are? Or you might be, you know, atheist, agnostic, whatever you are. Forget about the religious overtones. Nation of Islam said something that was very important. Do for self. Do for self. Do for self. Now, let's bring that to something that a lot of us can understand because we've seen this happen. You remember when Master P, and of course a lot of people didn't like Master P's rapping, but when Master P first tried to go to record companies, they was like, get that garbage out of here. What did Master P do? He figured it out because he couldn't go to the record company. So he started moving the units independently. He figured it out. A lot of artists have done this. I don't know if people remember South Park Mexican, who's making millions of dollars a year, another rap artist. And there's been a lot of artists over the course of the years. Reason why I'm using rap music, because rap music is a story that black people are very familiar with. You understand? So you won't block it. It gets past your defense mechanism. I could use other things, but I will use rap music. These artists had no choice but to do for themselves. And then once they got really big, major record companies said, okay, we'll give you $10 million, we'll give you $5 million, we'll give you $15 million. You could turn the deal down because you're making money now for yourself, or you could accept the deal. You see how that works? That's the power of doing for self. But the reason why they did for self is because they were left with no choice. Now, I say to a lot of black people, if tomorrow you knew you couldn't go get any type of program or anything else, right, and there's police on every corner, so you can't go robbing and stealing. That's not an option. A lot of us, not all of us, a lot of us, not all, would figure it out because we're not a stupid people. Very creative. Some of us are very intelligent. Then you have some that are very stupid. You can see that. We are very talented. We are the most talented people on the planet. So we would figure it out really fast. Figure it out. And I think that's the way forward. That's just the way forward. But we have that mentality. Well, you know, something's coming for us. Someone's going to do this. Someone should do this. Someone should do that. What happens when you give somebody a fish? They come back the next day for a fish. And you might say that they are starving. So you give them a fish. And then the next day they come for more fish. And then the next day they come for more fish. They still have not learned to fish. You have to learn the fish. You have to figure it out. And within figuring it out, you're in the process of not being right, trying to get it right. You make a lot of mistakes. You fall down. You look stupid. And then eventually you get the eureka moment because we're a talented people. That's the reality of it. Talented people, creative, whatever it is that you want to do. You know, of course, if you want to be a lawyer, you know you have to be go to school. You can't sit at home and do that. But if you want to do a business, eventually you're going to figure it out. You'll fall flat on your face many a time. People will tell you you're wasting your time. You just keep on going, and then you figure it out, and then you have the eureka moment. And lo and behold, it's moving along. You know why? Because no one was going to do this for you. That's all. It's right there in front of you. It's right there in front of you. Nation of Islam. Not my words, their words. And I'm not a Muslim, so I'm not endorsing them. For those of you that are Christian or whatever else you are, say, oh, he's talking about Muslim. No. But put that aside. Do for self. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Raffo Nerd.
Yeah, just one other thing. I see our friend Ja Williams is in the chat room, and he says, we can't dismiss that we did not we can't dismiss that we did not get our due after slavery. We were made sharecroppers instead of landowners. That was up to the government. And if you add that and racist society we have to deal with, then there's a reason why. See, what you're saying is not incorrect, but my problem is we had those hindrances, Captain, and we still managed to have baseball leagues that were internal. The black dollar was circulating, I think, upwards of 20 times in the black community. There's many pockets of success that really go against the time. Considering you had Jim Crow and the grandfather clause and pig laws and black codes and all kinds of reprehensible, illegal at that time, legal impediments.
Strange fruit.
Yet strange fruit. Shouting out Lady Day, Billie Holiday. You were getting strung up. You didn't have the black KK at that time. We had the white KKK. I mean, one can make the argument that you had it rougher 50, 60, 70 years ago, and still you managed to conduct internal business with black people. So I'm confused. I mean, you know, this is one of the reasons why I became a conservative, because I've said it before, reading Shelby Steele's Content of Our Character, where he really lays out what victimization does, is that you could keep on dwelling on this victimization thing, and you're not going to get it done. I mean, if you're waiting for this apology, it's not coming. You're looking for humanity to be given to you. I mean, it's the whole premise of someone telling you you're free. It's kind of crazy. If you really think about it, can you imagine telling another human being, oh, well, you're free now? I mean, human beings are always meant to be free. But, you know, that's not the way it was. I mean, you were a captured person. Now you're not. But we dwell on the hurt so much that we're not getting it done. And when people talk about what slavery did, some of it's not factual. When they said slavery broke up the family, during slavery, yes, there were families that were broken up. But somehow, from, let's say, 1865 to, let's say, 1965, the black family was intact. Heck, I spoke to the Oracle today, and as a kid, we were talking about the amount of two-parent homes that I lived amongst. And I was like in the 90th percentile range. And this is going into the late 70s, early 80s as a kid. So even into, you know, we're talking about maybe 30 years now where things have really got all to shame. But it really has not been that long ago. Well, yeah, I mean, listen, even with all the hell, Captain, if you stay focused on education, we used to have a mantra used to hear all the time. We don't hear it anymore. The mantra was, you've got to be three times or four times as good as a white person to get the job, or you've got to do triple the work or be triply better than the white person in order to get respect. That might have been a negative, but there was a positive in that as well. We don't hear that anymore, that you have to be triple the best. That was a black mantra. Where did that go? Where did that go? We don't hear that, and we don't hear the parenting angle of it properly. I mean, with all the hell that was going through, you still had factors that would still lead you to a successful life, even in segregation, even in hell, with a solid parental familial structure. Your black church was more effective. You didn't have your preachers on TV with their shenanigans and fondling your boys and girls. There's a lot of things going on. I mean, the excuses are wearing thin. That's it, Captain.
Let me just add before we get to the caller. 626, we see you. Just hold on. Everybody that I came up with as a kid, it was a two-parent household. There wasn't any. I didn't have any around me. Everybody was in a two-parent household. There wasn't any single-parent households. There wasn't. That was just a mandatory thing. Now, some of the kids might not have had the best mother or the best father, but both of them, both parents were turning the key every night. We had something at that given time known as the weak father, where maybe the mother had the big salary and the father was a bit low end. We called that weak fathers, but the father was still in the household. We had some of that, you know, but everybody that I came up with, it was a two-parent household. The white kids, the Latin kids, the black kids, everybody. Now, just to add on to this now and take it back, yes, we were brought here in chains. Yes, we were enslaved. Yes, we are damaged goods. Yes, okay, black man. But if help is not coming, what do? Just lay down and die? Or do you figure it out? I remember when these Jordans were coming out, the first time they were coming out, the first pair. And 90 days before they came out, I got the price. They were going to be $74. A lot of money going back then. Huge amount of money for a pair of sneakers. There's no way my parents would have bought me these sneakers. I figured it out. I said, okay. They had like a summer youth job, right? And I really wasn't eligible for it. Wasn't eligible, all right? Because two-parent is supposed to be for low-income kids. So in those days, you could put down one parent's income. I put down my father's, not my mother's. My mother was knocking it out the box. My father was just right there borderline at the time. Later on, he made more money. So I was able to get this job because I wanted the sneakers. I figured it out. Now, that might be small, but it's big for a kid. As an adult, you're like, yeah, that's nothing. That's a stupid analogy. But a kid, it's small, you know? For a kid, it's big. For an adult, that's small. I figured it out. You just figure it out when you want to make things happen. You got to figure it out. You know why I had to figure it out? Because there wasn't any help coming. I could have went to my parents all day long. They would not have bought me these sneakers. I could have went to my older brother, older sister. They were not going to give me the money. Wasn't any help coming. So I had to figure it out. Just figure it out. Sneakers, it's a small thing. But from small things, you go on and you do other things. Now, I know some of you will turn around and say, yeah, that's easy for you to say. You were in a two-parent household. You're angry. You're still angry because you were only raised by your mother and everything else. But even you still have to figure it out because help is not coming. They left you on the planet by yourself, and you got natural resources. Now you have to learn how to catch animals, skin it, cook it up, and feed yourself. You have to be able to figure it out. That's all. Back over to you, Seraph on Earth. Let's get to the caller.
Yeah, let's go to the call. Let's go to the caller. 626, welcome to Afro Radio. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
This is Covina, man, from California. How you guys doing?
Hey, Covina,
pretty good, man.
What's up?
Hey,
what's going on? Yeah, I think that, you know, in the situation, I think there's a lot of, the situation is so deep, man. But on the issues with black folks and the dysfunction that's going on, I think that it's not an either-or kind of dynamic, which I had put in the chat room. But it's a both. You have to tackle both the internal dysfunctions, like you call them, you know, either the term you guys use. Okay, I can't think of it right now. But the minstrels, like the internal minstrels, you have to deal with that. But then you don't put that down and then go deal with something else. You have to tackle both. You have to tackle the political. You have to tackle the economics. You have to tackle all the ignorance and the, you know, socialization of black folks. Like someone had put in the chat room, like how did black folks lose the hair care industry? How do you have something where there nobody else buys products for black hair? So it shouldn't even be a question that if you wanted to do something for black hair, you would, you know, like most of us guys, if we go to a barber, we go to a black barber. It's like not even a question. We don't go to Supercuts or whatever. But for some reason, they have been socialized that they can just go to a store and get some products for their hair. And those industries have just been slowly over a couple of decades have went from the hands of control from black folks to control of Korean people. And there's something systematic about the destruction of black family and how specifically this white devil, whoever is responsible for this, have systematically programmed the black woman to not need to depend on black men for a goddamn thing. They have to depend on nothing. They don't have to depend on a job. They don't have to depend on, you know, they can go to welfare. They can go, but they only, if they get pregnant by a guy, they don't even have to do it. They just go to a white court and say, white court, send me this black man's money. And the white court would just send it. Don't worry about it. We got this. 18 years, whatever. If you don't pay, you go to jail. If the white woman don't have money for the kid, they'll give her a government check. If the black man don't have money for the kid, they send him to the jail. Now, white folks did that. Black folks didn't do that. You and I didn't do that. We didn't come up with this system. White folks came up with this system. We're going to programly erase black people. And this is how we're going to do it. And the thing is not that we can't handle, we should be able to handle the minstrels. We seem to be able to handle that. At least we have the ability to just walk the other way or just criticize them. They'll leave you alone. Well, what do you do about the people who's controlling the economic system and putting black folks from the grave, like in Zimmerman and Trayvon, to the situation with black folks, black women just getting this money and walking the heck off? How do you handle that? We can handle the minstrel. How do you, sir? Go ahead,
Captain. You want to tackle that?
Well, you see, what you mentioned when you say with the woman getting the welfare, getting a check, that started back when we had the feminist movement and we had the liberal movement. It was a total big liberal movement that started. That's white liberal movement. That's something we spoke about shows ago when I said
great society.
Black people, yes, yes. Black people have a tendency, they never talk about the white liberals and what they did for society in general, you know, that led to this point. Because in order for them to get these programs, the black man couldn't be living in the household, couldn't be living, all these programs and everything else. And that started with the feminist movement, again, done by men, white males, set that all up, you understand? And then all the other multiple programs, you know, that they have, that was done all by them. That's what it was. And black people, you make a good point. Black people don't speak about that at all They don't speak about it. You know why they don't speak about it? Because white liberals always come across like, it's all right, man. Don't worry about it. It's okay. I understand you're a little black guy. It's all right. You could just get this. You could get that program, and everything is okay. They come across like they actually really love you to death. Now, maybe one or two of them actually do. But we know what the movement is about because we have the history on the movement. All you have to do is look it up. That movement destroyed us. It helped out the white female, though, but it destroyed us. Totally destroyed us. And it's something we speak about. We have spoken about it several times on this show. Black people will not diss the white liberals at all. And it's the liberal programs that led us down that path. As soon as those liberal programs came out, that's when the black male came out of the household. And that's when everything started gradually to go crazy. That was it. We was fine before that, as far as the black man being inside the household. Back with you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I mean, that's kind of, there's a great deal of scholarship on this. You could think of Daniel Patrick Moynihan's Moynihan Report, going back to 65, where he talked about the demise of the black family. And at that point, we were talking about maybe 25% out of wedlock births, single-parent households. Now it's in the 80 percentile range. And at that time, your black leaders, many of them who are still with us today, shouting out Reverend Jesse Jackson, he was a real vocal opponent to Moynihan's report. Now, I don't know what he thinks about it today, but Moynihan was really doing the black community a favor by telling you, listen, this is what's going on. This is what the projections are for you folks. No one wanted to listen to it. It was deemed as being racist, and now here we are. I would love, if we were still at 25% now, 25% sounds like heaven compared to 80%. I mean, it's exponentially worse now than it was then. And you right, and you're talking about then was just at the point where some of these deleterious legal impediments were being dismantled. So, you know, and you're confused. You can also be confused by the fact that you have black businesses. They may not have been on par with white businesses, but you still were in a situation where the black dollar had to circulate internally several times. We only circulate a black dollar once. I mean, listen, everyone is different. That the Asian community, they're not really into politics. They are and they are not. But they're not as wedded to political access the way that black folks are. No, they could care less who was in office. They keep things pretty simple. You're going to get this degree. We're going to band together. Whatever happens, our motivation is going to remain the same. Black folks, we don't have a plan. Other groups seem to have plans. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. I mean, it's pretty simple. But to constantly labor on the white man is the quote-unquote the devil, the white man didn't treat me right, he kicked us in our butts for 40 years, these facts are immutable. What are you going to do? Even the African who is blacker than you, that's the original black man, he comes over and figures it out. We cannot, and also, and I've said this before, it's a broken MP3. Somehow, we're able to make business. Now, black people do have an industry. And you know what industry it is? It's the minstrel industry. That industry thrives. Why? Every other industry that we could be doing, we don't seem to want to do. But the stuff that makes us, that puts us in a position of being clowns. The Zimmerman and DMX match, for instance. We dodged that bullet. But that was commerce involved with that. And we were ready to dive in. We were ready to dive in. So I'm saying we cannot be the victim all the time. There is a thing about victimization talk, and it's very seductive. Stop listening to those folks at CNN and MSNBC solely. We know that the people at Fox are a-holes too. But you got to figure out a way to navigate between those worlds. But this whole deal about everybody being victim. Well, hold on a second.
Go ahead. Yeah.
My whole thing is we cannot continue to talk about the hurt and pain exclusively without doing something. No one else is going to do it but you. That's all I'm saying. Our forefathers had work to deal with, and somehow they were able to have a 20-some-odd baseball teams. What is that? You had baseball teams. Black folks had their own baseball leagues. Where's that now? 100 years ago, you had an auto manufacturer. During Jim Crow, when a black white man would string you up. The excuses of wearing thin. I'm sorry, man. You got to explain that to me. You can go.
Yeah, I was just going to add, I'll tell you everything you said. I was just going to add that the other brother was talking about, the captain, is that black folks don't speak out on certain things. And I think that is part of the disillusion or the wool over the eyes that that is being pulled, over the public. Because I think that when you have a black person who, like I said, stands up against whatever kind of programming, where it'd be like, if a good example is like Dr. Umar Johnson, just maybe 2 weeks ago, he was supposed to speak somewhere and they didn't like his stance on homosexuality or whatever. That's just an example. I'm not taking him specifically, but just an example that it, when they find that a black person believes or speaks about something that doesn't fit the mainstream narrative that they want black folks to parody. They want all black folks to be, against guns. They want all black folks to be for immigration. They want all black folks to be for homosexuality or, whatever it is, this is what they want. As soon as they find that black person that doesn't believe in that, they ban them. Oh, you can't come over. You can't speak over here. Oh, you can't come to CNN and speak. You can't go to MSNBC. What they do is they just isolate those people. Right, so those people don't get on and get to speak for a large amount of black folks and say, "Oh no, we don't believe in this." They just find those specific mainstream media minstrels who will parody what the white establishment wants them to say, and they just isolate the rest.
Gavina, as always, we appreciate you coming through. We got about 5 minutes remaining.
Bro. All right, bro.
Thank you. Captain, I do want to, again, 5 minutes. These grindhouse shows, man, they move.
We can talk about this for 3 hours.
Say it again.
We could be talking about this for 3 hours.
Oh, forget it. Just that. Just that. I do want to mention. I do want to talk about something that Jerry Seinfeld got into.
Oh yeah.
That I thought was disturbing. Comedian Jerry Seinfeld was asked about his comedians in cars getting coffee series, which I actually like. I think the last episode was Howard Stern, and he's a car buff. He picks up these comedians in cars, and he just shoots the breeze with them as they get coffee or whatever. So someone questioned him about, you don't seem to have that many black comedians on there. So this is what he said. Hold on.
I have noticed that most of the guests are mostly white males of 22 episodes.
Yeah,
that you've
let's
had.
Get into that.
No, but you
take a look over here, Peter. What do you see? A lot of whiteies. What's going on here? This really pisses me off. But go ahead.
That's okay.
Go ahead.
But you made a comment on the Tina Fey episode that I thought was interesting that I'd like to get your thoughts on a little bit more. You said you were talking to her, and you said something about the female comedians. It's a struggle for them to balance their feminine projections with their comedic goals.
Yes.
And in the context of comedy, not gender diverse, I just want to know what you meant by that.
Well, I'm kind of curious what it's like to be a woman in comedy as opposed to a man. There is a little bit of a difference, and I thought that might be an interesting thing to discuss from her perspective. She's so successful at it, And I was just wondering how she looked at it, if she even thought about it. And she kind of gave me the answer, which is, yeah, you do have to think about that, but, you know, it's just another thing to think about.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Now you. But there were a lot of things about Comedians in Cars in the beginning. The first 10 I did, I think, were all white males. And people were writing all about that, which
That's part of the reason why I asked. People had tweeted at me when I said I'm interviewing with Jerry Seinfeld. I said, ask him about their gender diversity on the show.
Yeah. I mean, people think it's the census or something. I mean, this has got to represent the actual pie chart of America. Who cares? It's just funny. You know, funny is the world that I live in. You're funny, I'm interested. You're not funny, I'm not interested.
Okay.
And I have no interest in gender or race or anything like that, but everyone else is kind of with their little calculating, is this the exact right mix? You know, I think that's, to me, it's anti-comedy. It's anti-comedy. It's more about, you know, PC nonsense than are you making us laugh or not?
Right, right.
I'm not so sure about that. This kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, Captain, is that you've got to be able to deal, especially with a society that seems to really not want to really concede to you. If these folks don't want to hire you or bend to your will, you still have to survive. You still have to figure it out. Because I thought that answer was a lousy answer. He did it very slick. And very comedically. Comedian, you know, he's a minstrel too. And I like Seinfeld. But they are very adept at moving things along and not getting into what the man was really saying. You have this show. There's a large black comedic community. Why wouldn't you have more than, I think he had two for the entire show. Latin comedians. I mean, to be more sensitive to that. He said, well, you know, I'm not really about that. I'm not counting. But if everyone, suppose other industries took that attitude. Not that we don't know if they're not doing that. But if other, you know, you go into an insurance company, you go into an engineering firm, to a law firm, and everyone conducts themselves and gives you that kind of half-assed response. It wouldn't work. Catherine, we've got under a minute. Your thoughts?
Well, there's two ways to look at it, okay? There's one, he gave the white guy answer. You know, white guys a lot of times are insensitive to the race situation. They do what's comfortable, all right? So, and we also know that political correctiveness is killing us here in America. That's one thing. The next thing is that if, just as you said, if you don't pressure at times the white community, the ones that have the power, power equates to you getting paid some money, a check, they will not hire you. You have that. But also, you remember what Russell Simmons did with Def Jam Comedy? Why did he do that? He had the power. Why did he do that? Because a lot of black comedians were not getting their shine. So he went ahead and did his own thing. And thank goodness he did go ahead and do it. Thank goodness. And a lot of people built up their career, built up their life, and they owe Russell Simmons a due credit. So there's a lot of ways to look at it, and we need to explore this further on Wednesday, and let's talk about it more.
Definitely. Captain, as always, we will readdress, reconvene on Wednesday. It's been a pleasure, folks. Again, apologies for the preemption, and hopefully I'll be back in full health for Wednesday. And we'll see you on Wednesday. It's been real. This is, I believe, Q-Tip and D'Angelo. Let's groove. See you on Wednesday.
I believe, yeah, yeah.
I believe, just love, I believe, just love, I believe, just love, I believe, just love.
When you give back from what you receive, you know, when you hold me down and made me believe, you know, when you see, oh, she let you go, you know, and when we say ho, y'all say ho, don't think about it when my back is turned, I know you're right there for me and I won't get burned, love shows itself in
in so many ways that we sometimes overlook it in the course of a day. Don't be mad, girl, you used to be sad, girl, but now that we got this, forget what we had, girl, and see the forest from the trees. It's not windy, it's just the breeze, you know.
I believe, that's love.
When a blood crib put down their grip,
that's love.
You know, when you're in the club and you move to this,
that's love.
You know, when you're famous fat and they rest their head,
that's love.
You know, and bring them home now, that's what we said. I'm on your stereo, when I'm in your video, when I'm gonna put the heat on a non-stop stream. I really can't stop, but I hit y'all with a drop. Hey y'all, this is Tip on W.E. Dream. W-E-D-R-E-M. Request this and show love to me, fam. Come on, come on, come on.
I believe.